check, check, one, check, 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 one, check, two, check, check, check. All right, let's get this show on the road. Dominican.edu, the official radio station of Dominican University of California. I'm your host, DJ Trouble, and I can't wait for my classic soul to share some classic rock knowledge with you all every Monday night. Each week, I will be telling you about a legendary band from the classic rock era. Now, we're talking 60s and 70s here. I don't mess around. I was raised on this music. That will have the baby boomers of the 60s feeling nostalgic and the newer generations ready to discover something old, yet something brand new. This week, we'll be jamming together to the most iconic band of all time. You know them, the Beatles. Now, mostly everyone is familiar with John, Paul, George, and Ringo. But how did the Fab Four come together? Pun intended for all my Beatles fans out there for listening, and thank you for tuning in to radio.dominican.edu. The band officially formed under a different name in 1957. 16-year-old John Lennon formed a skiffle group, which a skiffle group is basically an early four-piece rock band with simplistic guitar, rhythms, and beats. They were mostly influenced by the blues, so they took after them and then created rock and roll. At his school called the Quarrymen. Future members Paul McCartney, who was 15 at the time, and George Harrison, then 14, joined the band as rhythm, lead, and guitarist, respectively. Paul and George were friends prior to this. They met on the bus, and they started talking about, "Oh, I love guitar. Oh, I love guitar, too. Oh, let's be friends and start a band. Woohoo! Teenagers." And John was really impressed with George because, as if you listen to the Beatles more often, you will learn that George Harrison was a really good guitarist. But he considered rejecting him because of his age. He was too young. He was 14. You can't travel at that age. Lucky for us Beatle fans, John did the right thing and let George stay. John's art school friend, Stuart Sutcliffe, joined the band as bassist in 1959, in which he suggested the band change their name to Beatles. The name evolved from there to the Silver Beatles, and then in 1960, they officially became the Beatles. Pete Best was hired as the drummer that same year. Back then, they would rotate between drummers. They couldn't find anyone consistent, and Pete Best was kind of the closest thing they could find, so there we go. Then the Beatles landed an extensive gig to play in Hamburg, Germany. That's kind of where they got their beginnings, and they started to really gain notoriety and got paid in beer and money to pay for the beer in Germany. After 2 years, Stuart Sutcliffe wanted to quit the band to do art again. He met this German photographer who photographed the Beatles as well. Her name was Astrid. They fell in love at the young age of 21, and they wanted to spend the rest of their lives together. So instead of the Beatles returning to England like they wanted to, they were originally from Liverpool, England, Stuart was kind of like, "Nope, I'm just going to stay here." However, after the band left, he would die of a brain hemorrhage at the age of 21. It was a tragedy in John Lennon's life, as he would explain later. However, the Beatles would return to their hometown of Liverpool in 1962, and they performed at this gig at the Cavern Club, which is a local pub/bar in their hometown, and they were discovered by Brian Epstein, who was a record store owner, and he would discover the Beatles. He'd be like, "Hey, I really like your sound. You're going to make a big splash in the music industry. They don't know what's coming. So I will sign you to a record deal and I will make you famous." And so that's what happened. 3 months after their return to England, the Beatles were signed to a record deal with EMI, which is a British record station. Pete Best was kicked off drum duties in preference to this guy named Richard Starkey, who liked to go by the name of Ringo Starr. So he's the guy. They're like, "Okay, we don't like the fact that we kicked off Pete, so we'll give this Ringo guy a try." I think it worked out in the end. But the rest is history, which I'm going to be talking to you guys about later tonight. I'd like to play you the first song of the night, the Beatles' first hit, "Love Me Do." The single peaked number 17 in the UK in 1962, but would peak number 1 in the United States in 1964. The song is recognized by its simple bubblegum pop lyrics and harmonica. I like to state my name again. This is DJ Trouble, and you're listening to Penguin Radio on radio.dominican.edu. Welcome back to Let's Rock and Roll on Penguin Radio. After the success of Love Me Do, on March 22nd, 1963, the Beatles released their debut album, Please Please Me. The album was recorded in 1 month due to the popularity the boys were getting in the UK. The album featured 14 songs, 8 were written by John Lennon and Paul McCartney. Now, they were the main songwriters in the band, and the Lennon-McCartney partnership is one of the most notorious songwriting partnerships in rock and roll history. It's synonymous with, well, they're their own craft, you know. These two would become the main songwriters for the band, and their songs would go to live in infamy, which you would recognize a Beatles song. Trust me. After 3 succeeding hit singles, Please Please Me, From Me to You, and She Loves You, all very bubblegum pop, cater to preteens. Very similar to One Direction today. And yes, I did just compare One Direction to the Beatles, but at the time, they were the biggest band in the nation, and every teenage girl loved them, trust me. And this phenomenon would be known as Beatlemania, and it was just sweeping the United Kingdom and all of Europe. Much more enjoyable than the Black Plague, though, but I can't believe I just said that. Anyway, later that year, the band released I Wanna Hold Your Hand, which was enough to propel the Beatles to demand an American audience and jumpstart the British invasion. Now, the British invasion, it sounds just like it. You think it is. It's just a wave of British bands that became very so popular in their native country that American audiences wanted a taste of them in their own radio waves in their own country. So they would come over, mostly for financial reasons, to gain more popularity and potentially make more money. And if they are successful in the United States, then they could be successful anywhere. On February 7th, 1964, the Beatles left for the UK for their first arrival in the US. 3,000 fans flooded JFK Airport to greet the Fab Four. 73 million people tuned in to watch them perform on the Ed Sullivan Show for the first time. To this day, it is the largest audience on an American broadcast television show in history. That's insane. I can't actually believe that. The popularity of the Beatles spilled over in the film with the band's first movie, A Hard Day's Night, released in 1964. Right now, we're going to play just a little track again. Like I said, you're going to be listening to a lot of Beatles music tonight. So I want you to listen to the title track, A Hard Day's Night. And it will startle you at first for a little bit. If you listen to the intro, you'll hear that ringing guitar again. That is from A Hard Day's Night. And I'll talk about that intro song later, too. So here's A Hard Day's Night off the 1964 album. And this is where you will definitely recognize it as a Beatles song instead of just a bubblegum pop song. Enjoy, and you're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu.
It's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog. It's been a hard day's night, I should be sleeping like a log. But when I get home to you, I find the things that you do will make me feel alright. You know I work all day to get your money to buy a thing, and it's worth it just to hear you say you're gonna give me everything. So why on earth should I moan? 'Cause when I get you alone, you know I feel okay. When I'm home, everything seems to be right. When I'm home, feeling you holding me tight, tight, yeah. It's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog. It's been a hard day's night, I should be sleeping like a
You're listening to radio.dominican.edu, and this is Let's Rock and Roll with your host, DJ Treble, on Penguin Radio. I really hope you're enjoying this Beatles Hour so far. We're only about 15 minutes in, and we still got a long ways to go. Now, that was A Hard Day's Night from the 1964 album, like I mentioned. That movie was kind of a mockumentary of what their first instance in America was like. Just swarmed by thousands of fans, tons of concerts, mostly on TV shows, just to kind of broadcast them and give them the advertising they so deserved. And it really paid off, and it's a fun movie to watch. Definitely recommend it. Now, but we're going to get deeper and go along this long and winding road. Another pun for those Beatle fans out there. I'll be here all semester. After the massive success of A Hard Day's Night, the Beatles were touring nonstop and becoming icons in 1960s society with their signature mop head, long hair, and clean-cut suits. Every girl wanted them. Usually Paul, because he was considered the cute one. I would have preferred John or George, but oh well. Already at this point, John Lennon was growing a little tired of appealing to the teeny boppers, alluded to by the Beatles meeting folk rock legend Bob Dylan in August of 1964. Bob Dylan was huge in the 60s, part of the hippie counterculture that at this year was kind of underground. Later in the decade, it would become something to definitely be notable about. Dylan was responsible for exposing the boys to marijuana, a common drug for the growing hippie counterculture. I mean, we live in Marin County. If you don't know this by now, you're living under a rock. This encounter and marijuana use would lead to Lennon and Paul McCartney writing more mature songs and opening themselves to more musical influences, which you will see in the later albums. If you really go through their discography, now, as a huge Beatles fan, I obviously have, you can notice a big change between the early and the later stuff. I'll talk about that later. A year later, Lennon and George Harrison tried LSD for the first time after having it slipped in their coffee by a friend of theirs. Some friend, huh? The band's use of acid and trippy drugs would have a major influence on their later pieces of work. Again, late 1960s hippie counterculture. However, the band were currently stuck in the rut of creating short, catchy songs for their initial audience in 1965. Because the whole point of being a marketable band is to sell and appeal to the biggest massive audience. They still remained the most popular band of all at the time, even being appointed as members of the British Empire by Queen Elizabeth June of that year. In July of 1965, the band released Help, and made their second movie under the same name. Although released to mixed reviews, the movie was, they described it as sort of like a mock James Bond film. The whole premise of it is Ringo loses a ring, and they're after some thieves. I can't even say I know the whole plot to it, but that's basically it. Oh, and they play songs because they're the most popular band of all time, and you really watch the movie for their songs. Which makes sense because the album itself contains many hits, including Help, Ticket to Ride, and Yesterday. Now, Yesterday is considered Paul's best love ballad, something he was very much well known for. His niche was writing the love ballads because, one, that's usually what gets the radio play, and two, he was just really good at it. The song itself is a testament to the shift in the Beatles' music and remains the most covered Beatles song of all time. Wonder if DJ Soundwave will play something like that. Check her show out. She does YouTube cover artists, and maybe one of them will do Yesterday. Much like the routine the band was into, a tour followed the album. Their third American tour in a year and a half. Now, that's so unusual to have, but it doesn't surprise me that much because the Beatles were just so, so popular. It's kind of hard to think about how popular they are. Like I said, just compare them to One Direction when they were brand new. They were huge, but not as huge as the Beatles back in the 60s. And this included their infamous Shea Stadium concert in New York City on August 15th, 1965. 55,600 people flooded the venue to see them live, which resulted in the band not being able to hear themselves play during the concert because it was too loud. After the tour, the band recorded Rubber Soul in October, which earned the nickname The Pot Album. This album displayed the maturity of the band, willing to expand songs into themes of romance and philosophy. One of their songs, Norwegian Wood, features George Harrison on the sitar, which is an Indian instrument resembling a guitar. It sounds very cool. Harrison was one of a kind to use this instrument in a mainstream band. Brian Jones, the bassist of the Rolling Stones, another band I'll be talking about this semester, also uses sitar on the song Painted Black. They were really well ahead of their time to use instruments like this, especially when they still had the reputation of being a teeny bop band and many of their fans could not shake off that image. One of the best songs from the album, In My Life, is also one of the most critically acclaimed songs from the Lennon-McCartney songwriting duo. I could actually talk about this album for such a long time because if you talk to most Beatles fans, most of them will cite Rubber Soul as one of their favorite albums because it's a little mix of clinging on to their past but not going super crazy into the psychedelic aspect of their lives yet. It's a good medium, and there's just so many good songs on it, but In My Life is a very sweet song, a very sweet love song, I must say, and I will play it for you guys right now, so just listen to the lyrics. Definitely listen to the lyrics. So, you're listening to Let's Rock and Roll, streaming on Penguin Radio on radio.dominican.edu.
There are places I remember all my life, though some have changed, some forever, not for better. Some have gone and some remain. All these places have their moments with lovers and friends. I still can recall some are dead and some stop and think about them. In my life, I love you more.
I'm just going to pause for a brief station identification. This is Penguin Radio on radio.dominican.edu, the official radio station of Dominican University of California. Currently, you are listening to Let's Rock and Roll, and I'm your host, DJ Trouble. My show is on from Mondays from 8 to 9 p.m. on this very station. This hour, you've been listening and talking about the Beatles with me, and we're just going to continue on this journey with the band. I hope you guys are really enjoying it out there. We move on to the year 1966, which saw some controversy dished out from John Lennon regarding a comment he made about religious and social conservatives. Nothing's really changed. Lennon said, quote, "Christianity will go. It will vanish and shrink. I needn't argue about that. I'm right and I will be proved right. We're more popular than Jesus now. I don't know which will go first, rock and roll or Christianity. Jesus was all right, but his disciples were thick and ordinary. It's them twisting it that ruins it for me." This unapologetic statement led to many of those whom Lennon attacked burning Beatles albums and memorabilia, even the Vatican banning their music in a few countries. I never quite understood why John Lennon made this statement. Probably just to bring more attention to the band. Maybe the sales of Rubber Soul weren't doing so well, and he just wanted to bring more attention. That, or John Lennon's known ego just being unapologetic and saying what's on his mind all the time, just got ahead of him. Who knows? Also in 1966, the band decided their fourth U.S. tour would be their last, with their final show on August 29th, 1963 at Candlestick Park. This is a very bold move of the Beatles, because to stop touring in the middle of their career to focus on making more conceptual albums was something that was completely unheard of. A week before their final show, the Beatles released Revolver, which is a personal favorite Beatles album. All this talking about the band from an objective point of view makes me just want to share my enthusiasm for this band for you. I became a Beatles fan when I was 9 years old. I've loved them ever since. I grew up listening to Yellow Submarine like any other kid, but I started really looking into their songs more, and I could not stop listening to them for a solid 5 years. Everyone knew me as the Beatles fan. It was a nice life to live. This is the best band to expose your kids to. However, Revolver is an album I'd put off for a while until they're more adult, maybe with the exception of one of the songs from the album Eleanor Rigby, which is a song composed of only string instruments, kind of like an orchestra, but it's an octet. It's fairly catchy, to say the least. I usually catch kids singing along to this song because it just sounds very upbeat, but it's actually a very dark song, which is why I find it hilarious when kids sing along to it. Seriously, I love this album because it's the first Beatles album to feel completely psychedelic, a true 60s album. You start off with Taxman, which is written by George Harrison, and another interesting fact is on this album, George Harrison begins to have his songs featured more often. Like I said, the Beatles were mostly dominated by Lennon-McCartney songs, and they are two men that love to just control that aspect. So George Harrison, although had brilliant songs of his own, which you see in Taxman and Love You Too and I Want to Tell You off of Revolver, he doesn't really get the recognition from Beatles fans and his bandmates alike, especially that time, because he was very quiet, kind of to himself, and he would just simply do his job as lead guitarist. Eventually, he would get frustrated and would want his piece of and his contributions more kind of put in and not necessarily rejected by mostly Paul McCartney. John Lennon and George got along quite well. Paul and George, although they started as best friends, there was some rift between them, and it definitely contributed into the albums. George Harrison's my favorite Beatle. I adore him. His music, the way he plays the guitar, you can't really have the Beatles without any of the four Beatles. Like, if you took out Paul, obviously you would lose the ballads. If you took out John, you would have that unapologetic image and that kind of revolutionary mindset and that inspiration. And if you take out Ringo, you would take out the fun and the lightheartedness that he brought to the band. That was kind of his personality. I'm just here for the party. I'm kind of lucky to be here. He had a rough childhood growing up, so he's just kind of lucky to be alive and all that. And if you take out George, you take out a real sense of musicianship, which I've always respected in him. The final song of their album, Tomorrow Never Knows, is a Lennon masterpiece. it is the second most psychedelic song I can cite. Mostly because it kind of sounds like you're listening in a loop. Like, if you listen to stereo in microphones, or headphones, you can notice that the sound will go from your left ear to your right, back and forth. Take that into a 2-minute loop of just crazy sounds, and you will get Tomorrow Never Knows. And you will get lyrics that don't really make much sense, are clearly a byproduct of the acid and the marijuana. However, it's brilliant. John Lennon had a real knack of taking unconventional sounds and just really turning it to just something beautiful. And something very reflective of 60s culture, of not being a conformist, just really going against the establishment and just making your own music. And that's all he wanted to do, was just make his own music. It's absolutely impressive of him. To this day, it just sounds so futuristic and far ahead of his time. Now, I won't play it for you guys tonight. This is a song I really want you guys to check out. This is a song you must know by them. It's not their most popular Beatles song. That's why you got your Eleanor Rigby, you got your Yellow Submarine, you got your Come Together, you even got your Hey Jude. But this is a song I definitely recommend listening. It's so far ahead of its time. I could listen to this in 2165 and still say it's so far ahead of its time. Ugh, I just love it. The psychedelic theme for the Beatles took an iconic and commercially successful route with the release of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band in 1967. The album cover itself is the most famous for the Beatles. What it has is the four boys, John, Paul, George, and Ringo. They're dressed up in these military uniforms, but they're not traditional camouflage green, military green. They're not like that. One's in pink, bright orange, bright yellow, green, and bright blue. And they have feathers on their hair. They're wearing their mustaches. Fun fact, if you actually look at the album cover, John, George, and Ringo have naturally grown out mustaches. Paul is wearing a fake one. He can never grow facial hair. And even when he tried, it would just look stubbly and it just would not match the image of the band. So he put on a fake mustache to go along with it. And they're in the front. They're standing in front of this flower bed of sorts, and it spells out Sgt. Pepper. Or spells out the Beatles, and then has the Sgt. Pepper Lonely Hearts Club Band logo on a drum set, or a drum head. And behind them are cardboard images of celebrities or very controversial figures in history. Like, I think in the kind of like the uncut version of when they were putting these people together, Adolf Hitler was in it, but they took him out. And they kind of plastered his face. They would have like really famous celebrities from the golden age of Hollywood on them. I believe Marilyn Monroe's on it. Mae West is on it. And a bunch of figures in British history as well. Just to kind of throw people in. Anyone that looked like they had sort of glamour and sort of that opulence to them were included on the album cover. To kind of make them look distinguished-like. Because Sgt. Pepper was the ego of the Beatles, and they really wanted to take a different direction. This was their first album right after deciding they were never going to tour again to focus on making more conceptual albums. Well, this is the album that they first made conceptual. Luckily for them, this psychedelic album was their most commercially successful, and by far, probably their most iconic album, apart from Abbey Road. But some people would say Sgt. Pepper is definitely more recognizable. The band knew immediately they wanted to make this album be nothing like they ever created before. And it really wasn't. Because they would use more orchestral instruments, like your trumpets. They use a lot of trumpets, especially when you listen to Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. They would use kind of like instruments you would hear in an orchestra band. And they really strayed away from sounding too rock and roll, yet they still sounded rock and roll. It's interesting. The album was an accomplishment, being ranked number one in Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Albums of All Time. Now, I'm not a big fan of Rolling Stone magazine, but I would agree with them. Sgt. Pepper is definitely, if it's not number one, it's definitely in the top five. I definitely recommend listening to it. There is not one bad song on that album. And even if a song can't really stand on its own, it definitely has a place in the album. Which, who even listens to albums in full anymore? I actually commend people who listen to albums in full, because people are just so attracted to listening to singles or just a particular song they love to hear on this album. It really takes a lot of patience to just sit down and listen to an album and just really enjoy kind of the pieces that fit together. And Sgt. Pepper is definitely one of the best puzzles I've ever listened to. The album also displays more hippie themes, like I said, with songs such as Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. The story behind this song is that John Lennon's son, Julian, drew a picture during art class, that was basically a woman floating in the clouds, flying above, as a girl with kaleidoscope eyes, as one of the famous lyrics in that song says, and he gave it to John, and he just got the idea of writing a song about it. However, we all know that is most likely a song about drugs, because its moniker itself spells out LSD, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. Which doesn't really surprise me, because John Lennon was an avid user of LSD at that time. So he neither confirms nor denies it, but he does get the story about Julian making the picture of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. And I just like to believe that, because it's so cute when kids inspire you to write songs. Oh, but about drugs. 60s. I'll be playing a bit from another one of their more experimental songs from this album, A Day in the Life. Listen for the haunting songs from the piano, Lennon's soft vocals, and a bit from McCartney that sounds very snap you back into reality until you go into a trance again, thanks to Lennon. You'll be listening to this on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu.
He didn't notice that the lights had changed. A crowd of people stood and stared. They'd seen his face before. Nobody was really sure if he was on the house floor. The British army had just won the war. A crowd of people turned away, but I just had to look. Having read
I noticed I was late. Found my coat and grabbed my hat. Made the bus in seconds flat. Found my way upstairs and had a smoke. And somebody spoke and I went into a dream.
Welcome back, Beatlemaniacs. This is DJ Trouble, back with more knowledge of the Fab Four on radio.dominican.edu. I'd like to apologize if that didn't sound so well. According to my headphones, it's definitely in stereo, so I can only hear only a little part of it, but I still enjoy it either way. After the release of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, tragedy hit the Beatles. Their longtime manager, Brian Epstein, the man who discovered the band we all love, died of a drug overdose on August 27, 1967. His death left the group disoriented and fearful about the future. Now it's totally clear that the band really began to fall apart without their manager. At least this is in my opinion. And even in documentaries, the Beatles definitely cite this event as the real big turning point in their dysfunctional relationship within each other. Between late 1967 and early 1968, the Beatles starred in two films, Magical Mystery Tour and Yellow Submarine, both receiving negative reviews. Both films were representative of the psychedelic counterculture the Beatles thrust themselves into. Magical Mystery Tour is interesting. The album featured the song I Am the Walrus, which in my opinion is the third trippiest Beatles song. Now you may be asking, alright Tressa, what is the most trippy song out there? You say the second most trippiest as A Day in the Life. You say the third most trippiest is I Am the Walrus. What is the most trippiest? Are you ever going to tell us? Why, of course I am. I can never let you down, audience. But I Am the Walrus, I gotta talk about this because the lyrics don't make any sense. In fact, John Lennon even said, it's not supposed to make sense. Lyrics are about nothing. I want to write a song about nothing, and I did. So, goo goo gajoob. The music leaves you in a trance without the drugs. I like music that I can at least really sense without even feeling high. So, now, the trippiest Beatles song of all time I'm going to deliver to you is called Revolution 9. This one is just plain weird. It's off of the White Album, which I will be talking about right after I play you this song. I'm not going to play you the entire song because I don't want to totally ruin the surprise for you, but I mean, just take a listen. Just take a listen. I'm going to play you the beginning. So I'm going to set up the weirdness for you, and it's up to you to listen to the rest of the weirdness.
Number nine, 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 number nine.
Some Revolution 9 for you off of the album, the White Album. Very, very weird. Very haunting. Their first double album, this is another personal favorite of mine. Although their most creative album, it is also during the sessions that the band began to quarrel with each other more often, especially longtime besties Paul and George due to creative differences, and disband as a group, including Ringo Starr quitting the band for 2 weeks, leaving Paul to play the drums on Back in the USSR and Dear Prudence. You could tell while listening to the album that it sounds like individualized songs in a set rather than a composed album. The tension and emotions are prevalent in this album. Rolling Stone ranks it as the 10th greatest album of all time. Each member of the band brings their musical abilities to the fullest on this album, especially George Harrison. He also displays mastery on the song It's All Too Much off of Yellow Submarine. I'll be playing that for you right now. Listen up for the loud guitars and then settle in for a treat. This is Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. Welcome back to Let's Rock and Roll on Penguin Radio. This is your host, DJ Trouble. We now enter the year 1969, which for the Beatles means changing record labels and changing sounds for one last time before their inevitable breakup. Spoiler alert! Around now, tensions are high as the Beatles are preparing for a rooftop TV special on top of Apple Records Corporation, also known as the Get Back Sessions. These songs would eventually be featured on their final album, Let It Be. George Harrison wanted to put focus on simply recording songs instead of performing live again, which the band agreed to. Instead, they shifted their focus on their upcoming album, Abbey Road, also known as the album with the band members walking on that one crosswalk on Abbey Road that is now a huge tourist attraction. Yes, I want to replicate it too. I just need to find three other people to do it with. Abbey Road features one of the best Beatles ballads as well as George Harrison's most notable songs, Something. For a band to deal with financial issues, new relationships coming in between the band, I'm looking at you, Yoko Ono, you're definitely the reason the band broke up. Just kidding, they already had their problems 3 years before. And general distress. While creating beautiful songs like this one is an accomplishment. Love the Beatles for that. Abbey Road is and still remains one of the band's most popular albums. Another beautiful song that I'll sample for you is off Let It Be, called The Long and Winding Road. I always believe this song, written by Paul, symbolized the road the Beatles took together. Although they would break up after the release of this album in 1970, the four of them would always find their paths cross to one another no matter what. Hear What I Mean here on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu.
The long and winding road that leads to your door will never disappear. I've seen that road before. To your door, the wild and windy night that the rain washed away has left a pool of tears crying for.
That's a great song. We're winding things down here on the first installment of Let's Rock and Roll. This is your host, DJ Treble, on radio.dominican.edu. Now, after the breakup of the band, after the releases of Let It Be and the Rooftop Concert, they disbanded in 1970, and all four members released solo albums that year and would have successful solo careers. Now, commercially, Paul was the most successful with his band Wings featuring his wife Linda. He would release songs such as Jet, Band on the Run, Admiral Halsey, other songs like that, and he would definitely be the most popular Beatle, well, alive right now, along with Ringo, the only two living Beatles now. Paul definitely cites the Beatles as the most important thing in his life because obviously he would be nothing without them. Although a fantastic musician in his own right, he wouldn't have been nearly as popular if it hadn't been for the Beatles. And he remains like a big legend today. Now, John and his wife, Yoko Ono, created the Plastic Ono Band and released hits like Imagine. And John Lennon really focused on his outcry against the Vietnam War He even had a bet in with his wife for peace, and he really embodied giving peace a chance and all that. He's definitely a big icon in the pacifist movement and that sort of thing. And you will definitely see hippies on Haight-Ashbury citing John Lennon as one of their biggest idols. He took a 5-year hiatus from music to take care of his second son, Sean, with his wife, Yoko Ono. He released his final album, Double Fantasy, a week after his murder outside of his apartment in New York City in 1980. He was killed by Mark David Chapman, and to this day, it is one of the most shocking deaths in rock and roll history. Now, George would maintain a successful solo career with charity benefit concerts, such as a concert in Bangladesh. He would team up with Eric Clapton, Jeff Lynne of ELO, and a bunch of other British rock musicians to create songs. And he even dedicated a song, When We Was Fab, off his album Let It Roll Cloud Nine, to dedicate his time being a part of Beatlemania. So the Beatles would definitely are cool with their roots. He would do many of these benevolent things until his death from cancer in 2001. Now, the final member, Ringo, he initially didn't want to be associated with the Beatles for some time. He liked making his own solo career, and he really liked traveling with his all-star band and kind of making up his own legacy. He had a little ego in him too, and he wanted to make a name for himself apart from the Beatles, so he would refuse fan letters. I would know. I wrote him one when I was 11, and a day later, day after I sent it, he posted a video on YouTube saying, "Don't send me any fan mails. I don't appreciate them. Stop bothering me." That broke my little heart. However, recently he's had a change of heart, and he's so proud to carry out his legacy alongside Paul as the two remaining living Beatles and as a drumming legend of his own. His son, Zach Starkey, is actually a drummer for The Who, currently on tour. Or at least he was. I'm not sure if he's that anymore, but I know he had a position with The Who. The Beatles will forever go down as one of the most remembered bands to ever influence music. In fact, Paul McCartney performed the last concert at Candlestick Park in 2013 before it was demolished. I knew people who went to that. I was very jealous. But it's definitely something that is very important to Beatles fans and Beatles history. I really hope you enjoyed this hour tribute to them tonight. I know I did. Anytime I get to talk about my favorite band and really share my passion for it is something that I truly cherish. This is DJ Trouble signing off with some Hey Jude, and I'll see you next week at radio.dominican.edu. But before I go, don't forget to check out all the other DJs at radio.dominican.edu. Tonight's shout-out, who I mentioned earlier, is DJ Soundwave. Check out her show, Uncovered, featuring YouTube cover artists on Tuesdays from 5 to 6 p.m. This is Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu, the official station of Dominican University of California. Go Penguins!
Hey Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her into your heart. Then you can start to make it better. have found him.